What is going on, everybody? Happy quarantine. Hope everyone's doing well out there. Welcome to the Fly Live Podcast, and I'm your host, Martin Novak. This week, I have the one and only Paul Nurkel on. You've probably seen him on DRL, the internet, or anything FPV-related. It's his second time on the show, and this time we talk a bit more about like his latest projects, diving into YouTube, just kind of like existential worries about FPV, film gigs, racing, all sorts of stuff. It's a really good episode, and I really enjoyed it, kind of maybe a little bit different from the last episode that he was on. But before we get into it, let's thank the sponsors. First off, we have Real Steady Go, which you can get $5 off with code FLYLIFE, or go to realsteady.com/FLYLIFE and save yourself $5. And in the near future, I'm going to be doing a video on Real Steady Go with the GoPro Hero 8 versus the 6 and whether it's worth it to get the 8. So stay tuned on the YouTube channel to listen to hear about that. And then the second sponsor, as always, is Emacs, which can be found at emacs-usa.com, and you can use code FLYLIFE for 10% off at checkout. I love Emacs products. I've been rocking them forever, and I don't think that's news to anybody. I rock the RS series. I got the Tiny Hawk Freestyle. And yeah, that's all you need. So make sure to use code FLYLIFE at checkout for 10% off at emacs-usa.com, and shout out to Emacs and Real Steady for sponsoring the show. Without further ado, let's get into this week's episode of the Fly Life Podcast with Mr. Paul Nurkel. Peace.
What's new in Nurk's world?
Not what isn't new in everyone's world these days. I mean, it's some pretty strange times that we found ourselves in. But you know what? I got to say, being locked down, or what's the word, sheltered in place, has actually been really good for me. Because like, you know, normally throughout the year, I'm traveling. Like in 2019, I think I calculated I was home like maybe 50% of the time, and I was on the road the rest. And until March, it was on track for like 65% already in 2020. So like being forced to be home and to be like getting into like disciplined routines has been really good. Because I don't like most of my work is to go out and film, and it's not necessarily to be like doing, you know, to like have like a more traditional job, I guess, where like I have something that I'm supposed to be doing. I decided when all this started that there was two things I have to do every day, and that is make content and get at least 60 minutes of exercise. One of those has remained true. The other has almost remained true. But like, so during COVID, or are we not saying COVID? Are you worried about the copyright? Okay, all right.
Bro, they could sue me for all 5 quads.
Cool. What that's meant is that I have put out a new video on YouTube every weekday for the last like 6 weeks. So that's like 31 videos in a row, except for one day I missed. And then I've worked out almost every day. I mean, since COVID started, I ran a half marathon.
Solo?
Yeah, I just went out and did it. Yeah.
There's some underground.
Yeah. Well, so in Indy, we have a race every year called the Indy Mini. It's part of like May in Indianapolis is a really big month because that's when the Indianapolis 500 is and all that stuff. And as part of that is the Indy Mini, and like it's like the highest rated, if you could say that, like half marathon in the world, because like you run around like the Indianapolis 500 track and like through downtown, and it's really fun. I've done it once before. So I was starting to train for that, and then it got canceled. So it's like, oh, but like, I was like, you know what? I'm doing it anyway. And I just like one night I was out running. I was going for like, I was trying to do like 8 miles, and I hit the end of 8. And I'm like, fuck it, I can do it. I just sent it to the end and did that. So, but like in COVID, I've lost like 30 pounds already.
That's awesome, yeah. Dude.
It's been, so like I'd say, like being disciplined and being forced to kind of stay at home is like super good for me.
Dude, and if there's one thing that's true about traveling, is it's so hard to eat well and on a regular schedule, like where your body just metabolizes the same way every day. It's so hard to do.
It's impossible. Yeah.
Yeah. You're like either full meal or 3 Clif bars again. I don't know what I'm going to do here. Yeah,
exactly. No, yeah. I'm a gluten-free celiac. So being on the road can get really tricky. If people are like, oh, let's go get, you know, breaded wings. And I'm like, well, okay. And then, so I keep a stash of literally Clif Bars in my luggage so that I have something to eat.
Dense enough to hold me over.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you like when the lockdown happened, did you like have this in your mind right away that you were going to go about it with these two tasks, or did you have like a couple days of like Netflix and chill and you were like, this, I can't do this for till this is over?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think of what had initially inspired me. For me, I have a really serious history of anxiety, like to the point where like I was having daily anxiety attacks. And if I'm not exercising and moving and getting outside, like I can regress. So as part of just, you know, trying to stay sane, like it was like, okay, I got to get outside. I got to do stuff like that. So like, you know, doing running, playing a little basketball by myself and the electric skateboard stuff has been really fun. Yeah. So
juke, layup, yeah. Free throw.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you wear the smartwatch and you just monitor your heart rate. As long as you're like within that zone, you're actually getting exercise.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Like I've been so in tune. Like I've just had so much time to think about things. Like I haven't been running, but my two goals were to fly every day. It's not raining. And then I walk 2 miles every morning.
There you go.
That's perfect. Like my routine. And usually like on that walk, I think of something like to do for my flying. You know, I'm like, oh, I should go here. And like, it's like some me time. But at this point now, it's been like 6 weeks. I'm getting to the point where I can't tell if it's been like a week or 6 months. Cause I like think back on it. I'm like, was that mid-March, early March? Like, when did this hit? How long has it been?
Yeah, looking, because I was kind of reflecting on the, like, getting stuff uploaded every day. And I look back, it's like, holy crap, it's been a while already. Like,
yeah.
I totally resonate with that feeling of not knowing, like, how far into it we are.
Yeah, you just lose track. And, like, we had talked before, we talked about the podcast, but just, like, losing gigs, it's, like, it's so, you know, losing gigs like with a job like this, obviously a lot of people like restaurant industries and stuff like that took a huge hit, but it's weird being like this vulnerable to something, you know, like, okay, they're like, because for like the last few years, for you longer with like DRL and everything, but for me, like the last year I was like, heck yeah, I'm getting gigs, like this is my full-time thing, I'm crushing it. And then like we both had like all the stuff lined up, it's like the season of the year where like certain activities start happening outside. And then it was just like, close the door on all of it. And it was like, for me, it was like a couple of gigs canceled right away. And then there was like a few that held out as long as possible. And they were like, no go.
Yeah. It's, I feel like the ones that I was working on got shut down pretty quick. And there was one more that they were like, kind of like, you want to just go for it? And I'm like, yeah, fine, let's do it. And then like literally the night before I was going to go out, like I had to fly there, my flight got canceled.
Oh man.
And they couldn't find another one. That was actually when I started talking to you, but they just said, ah, we're just not going to worry about it for now.
Yeah.
and I was hoping you'd be able to drive, but it was like 12 hours or something. I was scrambling to think of people like close enough that it would work.
You were thinking of Colorado Martin, not a Kansas Martin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you're like, you want to head out west? And I was like, yeah, where at? And you're like, yeah, it's not that far. I'm like, that's like 17 hours or whatever. Yeah,
it would have been, I think it would have been quicker for me to drive actually.
Yeah.
from technically the East Coast.
Yeah. Crazy time. And speaking of like, before we move off the YouTube stuff, have you like, has there been just like a very black and white positive bump in your analytics on YouTube? Like the constant uploads and. Because I feel like you've been uploading like pretty interesting stuff too. Like it'd be easy to get complacent.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I want to like, unfortunately and fortunately at the same time, I had two videos hit real well. That doesn't normally happen. Like I did the 12S drone. It's like up over 140,000 views, which like typical for me is like 10 to 15.
Yeah.
And then I did the City Whoop through the United States Air Force Museum. And that is up over 100,000 as well. And it has this weird, like looking at the analytics, like it has this weird, like linear climb to it, like where it just continues to grow and climb and there's no like sign of it like backing off. And I cannot for the life of me figure out why. And it really pisses me off because I'm like, what did I do right? Like,
just like a couple Facebook groups and like Bangladesh got a hold of it and are just sharing it.
It has to be that. Yeah, and but like so that has severely skewed what I was hoping would otherwise be a good experiment, but definitely views are up and everything. So it's been good. I think YouTube is rewarding it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like the constant thing helps a lot. But you know, like it's always this curious, because like I think YouTube is just a grind. You got to put in the time and like push yourself. But then in the back of my mind, there's this like, should have done a car channel.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to like, and that's what I've been trying to figure out for the better part of a year, and we'll come back to it with the podcast conversation. But like, I love drones, but I also love content creation as a whole. What, regardless of what the story is, all of it's really fun, and I want to do more of it. But like, are we too pigeonholed, you know, in this kind of niche community to make it reach further and further out?
I think like for the last few years, I think we're starting to see it slightly change, like both on our fronts as like pilots and the technology and the quality of the footage that's coming off these things. But also I think like creative directors are figuring out what to do with it more. Because when it first hit, I think people were like, this is so cool, but like, it's such a contrast to all the other footage I have.
Right.
For this commercial or whatever. And now like with the way the footage is looking with like Real SETI and everything and the new GoPros and obviously like the stuff we're going to talk about, like the full frame rig. And then like you see, like sometimes I'll be watching a commercial and then it'll be like a flip cut and it's like a quick FPV shot.
Yep.
I'm like, that's the move.
Yeah. My man.
This guy gets it. Yeah. And I think there's this like hot, trendy kind of thing, like the Daniel Schiffer kind of motion edits, like motion is becoming really big in content creation, I feel like. Yep. And that is really lending itself towards what we do.
Yes, I definitely agree. I see as like, I have as much of a hard time with like finding the commercial application for FPV footage as I do with that motion footage though, too. Like you're talking about like the really like fancy whooshy, like coffee making scenes.
Yeah. Like someone throws a pizza and at 120 FPS, you like move the camera with the pizza. Yeah. Yeah.
Like I sometimes have a hard time seeing the application of that in the same way that I feel like other people have a hard time seeing the FPV application as well. Like, that's really cool. How does it improve the story? And that's like where it all comes back to, is like, how do we communicate our message or tell our story better using this technology, whatever it is, whether that's wooshy handheld cameras or wooshy drones.
Yeah. Like, you know how in like skiing and stuff like that, they have like what they call like ski porn edits, where it's just like banger, cut, banger, trick, like just in your face. Yeah. I feel like the wooshy edits are like that. It's like the porn edit of B-roll or whatever content creation. And it's like some of the people I've worked with, like directors and stuff, call it like the fuckboy style, because like all the dudes that create it have like super fresh clothes and look pretty fuckboyish, which is true. And I think it appeals 100%. To like a sub 30, maybe sub 25. Like, it's like the new wave of,
yeah, oh, definitely it's, there's a younger audience to it. Do you ever wonder if I don't mean to like launch into a negative note here, but like if FPV as part of larger productions is just a fad?
Yeah. I wonder it all the time. Like, like there's going to have to be something that changes, and I'm sure it will, because technology keeps moving. GoPro buying Real SETI like gives me a lot of faith, you know, like moves like that. But like, I think,
I mean, maybe an even more broad scale, like directors wanting that look, right? Like if you look back, you know, to certain periods of time, like the look is to just have the camera locked off and never change anything. And then the look became, you know, a little bit of motion, and then it went back to just locked off. Or I can't think of a good example right off the top.
End of Watch versus Dunkirk.
But it's like, is that gonna,
I think it'll just maybe be like a niche thing, like, you know, like on like Peter McKinnon does like the reacts to crazy filmmaking, and there's some dude in the lab making some robotic motion arm that's like making it some more, you know. And there's like not that many of those people in the world, and it's a very niche application of that style of footage, but it gets used enough that person stays busy. I think it's going to be kind of something like that. Like, I don't Like, I still think there's like a taste in FPV of like the 2016, like, this is going to take over the world. And now it's like, this is going to take over the video world. And it's like slowly, like, humbly whittling its way down to what it's going to be.
Yeah. That's like, it makes me ask the question, you know, how do we make having an FPV shot as like necessary as just having like a dolly push in, you know, like is there a way to establish it as something that is so important to storytelling that we can't do without it? And we can create like a job for ourselves for the next 40 years with, or is that just not a chance and we should just have fun with it now? You know, like,
yeah, that's such a tough, like,
right. Is
put,
that, that's
put it all on Red Call. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I try to get a gauge of it all the time, and I try to ask a lot of people that I work with that don't fly, you know, like directors and stuff, like, how do you feel about this? What do you see? And, like, I think they're starting to wise up to it, so I don't think, like I said, it's ever going to blow up, but I think, like, the right application or, like, the right thing you're chasing, there's nothing like it. But for, like, a lot of the footage you're seeing, like, constantly put out on Instagram and stuff, like, it could either be done with like a gimbal or a Mavic. You know, like, there's not that much like super dynamic footage anymore. I feel like it's very like Real Steady came out and everybody was like, I'm gonna fly slowly through this area with my Cinewhoop and then speed ramp it here and we'll just copy and paste those settings for the rest of time.
I agree. Yeah. To a degree. But and that's why I always default to, like, and I'll have this conversation straight up with directors, like, where I'm like, you know, you don't want me if this is all you want. If this technology is not adding to the way that you're telling your story, it's not going to help with anything. And it's just going to be gratuitous. It's drone footage for the for the sake of drone footage, which I'm totally on board with.
Yeah.
But if I'm charging you four figures a day to do, like, it's not a mutually beneficial thing at that point. So I always go back and like try to say, like, you know, let's think this through. Let's think, how can we add something that this drone can contribute that nothing else can, you know? And that has, then you are kind of stepping back and reimagining the motion, reimagining like the way that this shot helps tell that story. And that's when you get some magic, I think, more than let's fly slowly through a field.
Yeah, totally. Like flying, and this is a battle I have all the time too, is like, what, like, in the FPV community, interacting with like people and their content, it's like, I have to remind myself there's people that do this for fun and there's people that do it like we do. And I can't like look at the fun people's footage like I do my own footage, you know, like, cause they're not like, a lot of people aren't like, I need to get this dialed. Like, it needs to be perfect. I got this film shoot. How is this framed? How's the light? Like, how's everything? Mm-hmm. And they're just not as critical about it. And they're like, I just want to go fly for fun and make something pretty and, you know, call it a day.
And share it with whoever wants to watch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like, I get caught in this, like, sometimes I'm like, I can't believe this person would do this. And I'm like, oh yeah, they're just,
they're just enjoying
on a Sunday.
Themselves.
Yeah.
They're not overanalyzing and punishing themselves for the hard work that they're trying to do.
Yeah. And like, not so much anymore, but like last year, a lot of the time when I was starting to take this seriously and like make some money doing it, I was losing the having fun part of it. Like, I was taking it a bit too seriously. Even if I would just go fly at the park, I'm like, oh, that wasn't close enough to that tree. I didn't like G out of that split S within a foot of the ground. That's garbage. You know, and it's like, you got to take like a step back and be like, hey, why did I get into this? And I have to enjoy it if I'm going to, like, I think anything creative you have to enjoy if you're going to really flourish in it.
I literally, about 10 minutes before we got on this phone call, I overheard my wife. She's on a Zoom with some friends, and she was saying,
just getting white girl wasted over there at one.
No. Like, they're playing board games, actually. But she I overheard her say, oh yeah, I can't get him off it, which was referring to this electric skateboard. And I shouted down the hall. I was like, it's the first time in 3 years I've had a hobby. Okay. Like,
yeah.
You know, I've switched out. Like, you know, I love drones. I love flying drones. I'm surrounded by them all the time, but like, you know, it's kind of work now too. And I love my work, but I also kind of want to have something else to do here and there. So like, I've been really enjoying having kind of something else to put some focus into it, enjoy and get better at, you know?
Yeah, and like, especially like something like skateboarding, like when FPV first came out, it was so mesmerizing and immersive. And now, like, I'll ride a bike at like 25 miles an hour down a sidewalk, and I'm like, this is living. Like, I can feel the air on my face. Yeah. Like, the sun's out, you know? Whereas before, I was like, this is boring. I want to go upside down over a tree.
A lot of the rides that I've had, I've had that same feeling that I had when I started flying FPV. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
And then it makes you wonder. And, you know, I think like anybody that makes it to this level, obviously you have like somewhat of an obsessive personality. Like, you do a hobby and you're like, okay, how can I maximize everything about said hobby, no matter what it is?
Yeah.
And like FPV was that for so long. And now, like, it's so fun to like find something new, whether that be electric skateboards or Call of Duty Warzone or whatever. You know?
I do a little bit of that too. I'm not willing to call video games a hobby though.
Yeah,
hobby implies something constructive.
Yeah. And when I watch the dudes that play a pro, I'm like, I'm not worthy. You guys are on another level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's with anything though, you know, anything in life, you can look at it but you just got to find a way to take your own joy out of it, you know?
Yeah. Do you ever like look back on getting into FPV and think about like, what if you got into something else the same way?
No.
That's good.
Actually, I don't think so.
I used to, but then I realized like nothing was like FPV, you know? It's like this weird mix of like something that was invented or like made popular after the advent of social media, which gave it this weird like tumor on its hip that we all have to deal with.
Not in a bad way, I think.
No, but it's like a new dynamic.
Yeah, like I work a lot with Indianapolis has a professional ultimate frisbee team. Like,
that's a dream job.
There are a number of players on the team that are like paid to compete and to be in shape to, you know, all this stuff. And so like I go and I just help them shoot video. The guy, one of the co-owners, is a friend of mine, and it's just fun to go out and like, you know, like do like NFL film style kind of like behind the scenes of what's going on. But with it being like a new sport, a sport that's kind of started in the last like 10, 15 years, like what's interesting to me is that sports like it and like drone racing and esports and stuff like that, is that social media is a part of it, right? It's not something that has come after the fact. It's you know, these guys are recording themselves doing trick shots and stuff like that all as a default. It's part of the process to become a professional. It's like, it's interesting. I think it's kind of cool that new sports are kind of almost having a requirement for that.
Yeah. You gotta be like semi into marketing if you're going to be doing like anything at a high level. I feel like, I can't think of someone like people not having a Facebook isn't that uncommon, but I can't think of someone I know that like does something at a high level that doesn't have an Instagram.
Right. Yeah. There's a few like, and it's usually like a celebrity or an actor or something like that. But like, you know, they're doing it to make a statement or something like that. It's just like, but for the rest of it, it's kind of a requirement. Like you got to get noticed somehow.
Yeah. You gotta push at least, like at least show the world, I guess. You don't have to push it. Usually, I guess cream rises. Do you ever have like a battle of like, do you ever like break down? For me, it's Instagram videos because I don't do that much YouTube, but like I try to like analyze my videos and their views of like what time of day I post it, what was the first 2 seconds of the clip, like what made this video hit harder, like what time of day was it, did I like do something that really grabbed the audience at first, was it chill? Like, do you analyze your own content like that, or do you just go with the flow?
I'm having a hard time deciding what my answer is, because like on one hand, I'm going to turn this camera for a second. Like, I have a screen right here dedicated to the latest video, like showing me this analytics of what's happening with it and why, and like when people comment and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, like I also make a pretty intentional choice not to get too sucked up in that, because when something bombs like today's video did, you know, there's a temptation to like to have your self-worth be pulled down by that in a way. Because, you know, when you're working on something creative, when you put so much of it, so much work into it, you're putting yourself into it in a way. And when people don't care, when they're apathetic to it or they hate it, you know, that's another potential on the internet. Love the internet.
Always.
it's very easy and unhealthy to have that attack, you know, have it hurt you and attack you in of itself. So what I try to focus on is, did I enjoy making this? Am I happy with the work that I did? Am I happy with the with how hard I worked on it? And let that be the measure of success for me. And then if people do watch it, great. If people don't watch it, fuck it.
On to the next one.
I'll make my own thing, you know?
Yeah, because I guess, I mean, at the same time, it's like not, I mean, your numbers are getting pretty big, but like it's also, like we're just a bunch of dudes flying toys in the sky and putting it on the internet, you know? Like it's awesome, epic, I love it, but we're not like, you know, like it's not the craziest thing out there.
Right, totally.
Yeah.
I want more people to see it because I believe in its potential and its ability to tell stories and to help us experience the world in a new way and to bring people together in a extremely powerful, connected way. So I want more people to see it. But if I measure my own success on other people's value in my content, then I'm going to be sad. There's just no way around it. Because yeah. Stuff is going to fail.
Totally. And I mean, yeah, it's just statistics. Like, especially if you're uploading every day for 6 weeks, you're not going to just have bangers every day.
No.
It'd be sick, though.
Yeah. I got to I'll talk about my. So this is a Sony A7 Mark III. Great camera. Love shooting on it. Does all the bokeh and the nice stuff.
Dude, this is my first Sony A7 III to A7 III talk.
Almost all of my vlogging lately has been on Osmo Action. Because it's just simple
and so easy. Yeah,
and nobody's noticed.
Yeah. I just watched Potato Jet's video on all the firmware updates and stuff.
I've been using this for like 3 weeks and he put that video out. I was like, yeah, cool.
Perfect. I knew it.
Yeah
it's true. Like I got the Sony like for this and then like to make some YouTube videos and stuff like that, but it is like I feel weird. Like I like using it for b-roll or like if I'm on a family trip doing like non-drone stuff with it. Yeah. I love it then, but it is like cumbersome to deal with on like a talking to basis.
Yeah and it's great for it,
and it looks so good.
It looks like, so good.
It looks so good, especially but, not on YouTube, like on your desktop.
Yeah,
straight like, out of file.
If you're what's interesting to me though is if you tell the story just the two of the same different cameras, nobody cares what the b-roll scene looks like, at least on these kinds of videos on YouTube. You know, it's they want the meat, they want to see what's going on, they want to see how you're doing it. And it's way easier for me to record, you know, a full day's worth of, you know, fiddling around with a servo gimbal with that camera than it is with this camera, and I could produce the same level of content as a result.
Yeah, and like you said, it's not like some cinematic b-roll. It's like you got a story or knowledge and information you're trying to share, like an experiment, and people are tuning in to like the data and the story of it, not the, well, I wonder what lens he's using to film this 12S setup.
Yeah, nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
I'll show you how few clicks there are on all of my gear listings for cameras and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Compared to the stuff that I'm telling the story about, you know?
And we were talking about like the slow, like I'm going to call it like over cinematic FPV footage. Like you could have just done it with a Mavic, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you think that is somewhat related to, like, I feel like in this last year, a lot of people that were into content creation also started building FPV quads, and like that influx of people led to that like chillness. Cause before it was like FPV people getting into cameras and lenses and settings and stuff. And so you had this like more FPV style flying and less camera stuff, and now it's like flipped. Do you think that advent of people getting into it has a lot to do with it? Or
so you're talking about like the Becky and Chris and the Maddie Apojas of the world that are,
yeah, which, you know, that was my favorite because I was like, eat it up world, this is hard.
yeah I love that.
Yeah.
but then they get so good at it, you're like, what, no, stop, call me instead. I think you might be right that like they have started, you know, once they get that basic level of flight going, and they're getting confident and they can start doing some somewhat basic maneuvers, like because we're all consuming that, we're kind of coming back and like, you know, and regurgitating, not regurgitating, we're adding it to our portfolio of ways to shoot. And so you just kind of, you go through styles, right? You know, because like 4 years ago it was Mr. Steel Flippy Floppies, 3 years ago it was like Gap It Flow, 2 years ago, you know, it became who knows? You know, it just continues to change. So I think eventually it'll start going back up into more complex flights, hopefully, taking advantage of the tools that like CineWhoops or stabilization have
to offer. And also the skill the pilot has to offer. You know, yeah, I think absolutely. That's like an underutilized thing. And like another thing, I mean, that's hard for a creative director to get tuned in to someone that's like, yeah, I can put the quad there 5 takes in a row, you know? I have thought about how sick it would be to have, like, if you could fly a line and your flight controller would just memorize your inputs and you could just have the drone fly. Yeah. You got wind. You'd have to like geolocate it and everything with like RTK GPS. I've thought about it a little bit, but,
but like realistically though, like there's not that many lines that I've been asked to fly that I can't just do 10 times in a row. Not because I'm good at flying, but because the line that they're asking for is relatively simple. It looks amazing when you're thinking about like what the camera is doing, but like in terms of like, you know, compared to like flying a racetrack, you know, it's like, okay, go through this hole. Okay.
Yeah. And which is what I was going to say too, is like, do you feel,
it's timing. That's the hard part.
Yeah, and especially timing it with the talent, you know, like it's easier if you're filming like a car or something that's bigger and it's like directional changes aren't as quick, but like if a skier, like that was the biggest thing for me was like airtime. Like it felt like the person was stopping dead in the air at the apex of their jump, you know, and I'd be like 30 feet behind them and then all of a sudden it was like 5 feet and then like dipped out again as they, you know, the gravity took them back down, like that timing and the trick too. And then in terms of like extreme sports, like skiers and stuff like that, you have like there's like two forms of talent that need to be in sync. The talent needs to land their trick or stick it or whatever, and you got to be there to capture it. And it's like these two variables have to line up perfectly and most of the time over and over and over.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things that I kind of get the most nervous about is you start to move more into like setup kinds of shots. Instead of like, you know, capturing a drift event or like a people on a ski jump, is that like with a ski jump, for example, like they're going to do the same thing within, you know, 10 degrees of
and the same speed
and over and over again, so you have time to kind of practice. But like what if it's a shot where it's like, this is a $4 million shot, these explosions can only go off once, you're going to be right here at this exact moment. Have fun.
I'd be like, I'm going back to cigarettes.
Yeah, exactly. So like that's kind of the stuff that I'm like that I've started getting more nervous about over time is it's like, how do we make sure like as soon as they say action, you're warm, you're hot, you know, you don't have time to just sit there and warm up. Like you got to freaking go.
Yeah, you're like, hold on guys, I need 2 power loops to warm up.
Right, exactly. No, that's not an option.
Yeah, totally. When you're on set and stuff like that, do you always have like an internal, this is how many milliamps I have left on this pack and this is how many packs I have left? And
I usually let somebody else think about that for me.
That's dope.
Yeah. So that I can just focus on safety and getting the shot.
Safety third, my dude. You ever had
I don't want my insurance premiums to go up any more than that.
Have you ever had any close calls or anything like that, or like anything that got your arm hairs going?
Not in that way. Like the worst is like embarrassing things. Like I started working for this bigger company. I can't talk about who they are yet. Because it's under an embargo, but I was working with them and like they were like, do this shot, like, and it was relatively simple. It was like they wanted me to imitate like a bird, for example, like and I did the shot and I went down for a dive and I just happened to clip a branch that was at the bottom and just snapped an arm off a quad, like first take with working with this, you know, very very renowned individual. And like it's just like, oh, this is like something that kind of stuff. Like it's not like nothing was in danger and nobody was hurt. And
Mr. like, Scorsese, I am so sorry.
Yeah, exactly. It's like that kind of, you lose this like emotional, like when you're on set, like you're doing as much sales as you are doing, you know, your talent, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah.
And
I nod along every time. We'll figure it out in the air. I got this.
Yeah. And so it's like, when it happens so early, especially in the shoot, it's just like, oh, damn it, I've just blown away any credibility that I already had, and now I've got to work from the ground up to get it right. You know, not that it's like confrontational where it's like me versus them.
But, and a lot of it is probably like internalized. Like, you care about what you do and you're passionate. So you're probably like, it's to the nth degree in your head versus they're like, damn, that's
pretty sick.
Yeah. Like, you broke an arm. It sucks. But like, I, on a ski shoot on my second pack, I ran the drone out of battery and I couldn't fly back to myself. I was like 20 feet short. Like, it was right there.
Oh.
But like, it made me realize that like another skill to have is like being level headed, you know, like being like, whatever. That was that one. Like, we're moving on. Like, I can't, can't let that affect, like, you can't be thinking of that branch, like afraid of it the next time you go out on that shot. You got to just be like, shit happens. And what did I do? I wrecked an M600, DJI M600.
That's a like $8,000 drone.
Yeah. And this had a $40,000 sensor attached to it.
Whew.
Yeah, it was, and I was like, this thing, it like fail-safed on its own. We were in this weird area, and this thing went behind a hill and crashed itself. And I had to go to the guy that owned it. Like, in that moment, he was like 100 feet away, and be like, this thing, like, it just laid down. We need to go find it. And I was like freaking out, sweating. It all worked out, not too much broken. And he was like, you should have seen what Jared did to that thing last summer. And I'm like, oh, okay, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's. Some of it is, you know, you've got to kind of protect your image in a way, but like the other is, you know, just be honest about it. This is what happened. This is why. Let's work together to solve it. Let's move on.
Anybody can appreciate someone that's like that stand up with their mistakes, you know?
Yeah.
Because they could always be like, they messed it up, but at least they owned it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, 100%. You gotta have fun with it. Going back to something that you said though, is like, you said, when you made that mistake, you've got to kind of just shake it off and move on. Something that I've been reflecting on is how my like YouTube stuff influences my, Cindy stuff, influences my racing stuff, and like, and how each of them touches on. And I think I might have an advantage on some non-racers on just clearing my head and letting it and moving on to the next thing. Because, you know, you crash in a big heat, you've got to just stop.
And not just, like, any heat, like a DRL heat. Like, cameras, hundreds of employees, like, so much pressure.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so I think that, so I've been reflecting on how each of those things have been influencing each other. And that was one conclusion that I came to, was being able to kind of shake it off and move on and just not worry about the stress of what's going on and focus on, you know, accomplishing your goal. Is really important, like, especially, you know, when it is, you know, a more important shot or a more expensive shot or something like that. It's maybe we have an advantage to just calm down. It's fine. Let's fly, you know?
Yeah. Yep. You got to have that moment. Do you think, you know, like, touching back on the, like, where's FPV headed? Is this kind of like a fad? Do you think there's like a future in like the Shen drones, the rig you built up with the full frame, or like what Beverly Hills is doing with Zenmuse cameras on big quads? Do you think like there's going to be a future for big, like, I imagine someday like a Red on a hex with an FPV pilot flying it 80% like an FPV quad, like maybe not inverted, but similar.
Right. I think that if we want FPV to make it to bigger screens, it's gonna have to be that way. To a degree. So there's a balance, right, of, you know, there's a look you're going for, and that's FPV, and then, but then there's, you know, a lot of directors have requirements for what technical specifications will meet their needs, right? If you take a GoPro and you try to display it on a 6K wraparound IMAX for a bunch of film critics at the Grammys,
what's up, 1999?
It's not going to play. Like, it's just a non-starter. So in order to figure out ways to take a better image package and put it onto high performance machines, I think is important. Do I think that the Shen drone's thick is the answer to that? I don't know.
It's a good step. Yeah. Like, directional move.
I got excited about the project because it starts that conversation, right? you put, you know, what is a, I think $100 frame into anyone's hands that can take it and play with it and tune it and say, no, this didn't work and this is why. And like, then there's a big community of people that are doing, we call them, we call them cine lifters, something like that. And it was, you know, it's about taking, you know, how can we get a better image out of high performance machines? And so, you know, there's stuff is not working yet, right? It's a heavy drone. It flies kind of weird. It's you can, I think when you were talking to Steven, you said that it looks like it looks heavy. Like it looks like it's not carving the way you want it to. I agree. But if we don't start taking those steps, we're going to find ourselves either stuck in the squirt, like, you know, car dealership commercials, and not moving on to the kinds of things where we can really show the world what these things are capable of. And so it was important to me to start taking those next steps, to take that risk. Like I bought the Blackmagic on my own and just said, okay, I'm going to try it and hope to God I don't smash it into bits. It's in, well, two pieces because the lens is removable so far, but
yeah, still good. You know, we're still good.
Yeah. So it's, you know, I'm
it, yeah. How was that first hover? Tell me about it after we,
well, it was with the X class when I did it first. Like that was the first one that I put it on. But I just took a big battery. That was the equivalent weight and did it first and just did it until I felt confident that it was going to fly. And then I was like, all right, we're going for it. Just do it.
Yeah. I just send it. Yeah. And I think too, you know, like we were saying, like this is, you know, social media era. It's like people messing with the Shen drones and putting it online doesn't mean like that's the answer. You know, it's no. Like you're trying this thing out and you're talking about it and posting it and sharing it. But it doesn't mean like you're like, yeah, this is it. We're here. We made it.
Oh, no, not at all. And I hope that people that like watched that video kind of took that away. The same thing I did with the Squirt. Like the Squirt V1 was really a pretty terrible cine whoop. But it, what it did was say, we're going to take full GoPros. We're not going to strip them down because it's cumbersome and and rough. It doesn't really add anything. Like being under 250 grams doesn't mean anything for anyone, especially in the commercial world. And and so like, that was like, this is how I want it to be. And then we, you know, iterated, got the Squirt V2. And now, you know, that thing is my daily driver. And it's amazing. So, you know, the same thing is, let's take the thick, let's look at, you know, what could this could be. Let's use it as much as we can. Let's put it in the hands of people that care what that image looks like. Even if it's not great right now, we're going to start that
it's
conversation.
It's still like in relation, your Blackmagic footage looks better than 2015 FPV to now.
100%.
You know, like the gap is much smaller than it was to then.
Yeah. And like, so the next thing that I really want to do is I want to find like a cinema partner that's willing to kind of take a risk on it not working great, but has a post-production background. Because I know that if we get somebody that's talented with Nuke, which is like, so like there's like what's the Mac Premiere?
Final Cut.
Final Cut. Thank you. Final Cut. Premiere, yeah. And then like Nuke is like way high, like super high end production. Like there's techniques in there to do stabilization that blow everything else out of the water if you have it in the right hand. So like what I want to do is find someone to partner with, like to make that foot, to take footage and then actually post process it the way that a cinema house would, and see what kind of magic would come out of that.
Yeah, which is an interesting like tug of war, because like when I saw your footage, like that was one of the things that was evident, was this is non-stabilized, right? Like it wasn't 2015 FPV, but it wasn't real steadied, and I'm not sure how I feel about that. Like I would want it to just be out of the camera. I don't want that crutch, you know, like, and I feel like it gives it a certain look, real steady, not stabilization as a whole, but yeah. Like real steady footage has a look.
Yeah, absolutely. But it was interesting, have you ever worked with a director and have them not want real steady? Because I've had that happen a few times.
The stuff I had played on ABC was all non-stabilized.
It's interesting to like, people just go for a look, and like so like sometimes that's even okay, is for it to kind of have that more raw kind of edgy FPV look. I'm not a very smooth pilot. Like that's not a question anyone's ever, but like, it's just cause I kind of just like wander, but yeah. Like, so like
Paul
I like
Butter Thumbs Nurkla.
Right. No. Yeah. So, I mean, I like having it you know, having the real steady look, because it suits. I can put the drone wherever I want it, but I might not put it the most smooth. But, you know, so now, like, I'm trying to figure out, like, what's the balance, you know?
Yeah, it is a weird, yeah, it's a weird balance, man. And, like, you know, like, on my freestyle rig where I'm flying 4K 30, like, it looks great. But once I bumped up to 60, I'm like, there's that jitter.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And then when you properly expose it, it gets rid of it, and then you maybe have to shoot at a higher shutter angle for real steady, you start to see it again, but the real steady gets rid of it. It's just like, it's scary.
Yeah. And like you were saying too, like, I think GoPros are limited. Like, they're so awesome, but they're so limited. Like, the bit depth in post-production, it's so easy to crush the footage. Like, you can't lacquer the stuff on. And then, like, with the low light and the exposure, like, if you're going to be flying, like, through some heavily shaded trees into some bright sun, you're just going to have to pick which ND. Yep. Like, which half of the shot is more important to you, and is it easier to go lighter or darker?
Yep. Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up low light. That's the thing that I always forget, is, like, if you're shooting at night or even in slightly dark conditions, having a, you know, a Blackmagic Pocket Cinema with dual ISO where the noise floor resets at, like, 1400 ISO, and you can shoot it on an f2.8 lens, you know, wide open, like, you can bring in a lot more light. And
but yeah, I mean, like, and that's another thing, like, lenses, like, I like depth of field FPV shots are still to be attained, you know.
You need some weird lenses to get some good depth of field with that, but yeah, 100%.
All right, I'm gonna roll to the right, get ready to pull focus.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's just a weird time. Like, I'm as stoked as I am, like, not stressed, but just thinking about it all the time. Like, every interaction, every piece of content I make, like, always starts off some tangent thought of, like, what could have, where is it going, what if?
Yeah, and that's the only place that I can see, you know, a big improvement needed. But, you know, there's tons of other things that, you know, we can be doing with just the GoPro Razor. Or maybe somebody's going to come up with a magical camera that is the size of a GoPro.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, cameras keep getting smaller. And, like you were saying, like, working with someone in post-production would be awesome. It would be awesome if you could, like, be like, hey, Sony, can you, like, just give me an A7 III with, like, nothing?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't need a grip, you know, like, I don't need all this stuff. Like, two dials, a place to plug in power, I'll pull it from where I need to, and the lens is most of the weight. Give me that
setup. Match GoPro field of view.
Yeah, that's another thing too, man. Like, that's another part of an FPV look, is that field of view.
100%.
Yeah. We'd mentioned the 12S rig a little bit before we talked about the thick.
Oh, yeah.
How is that thing, man?
Dude, it's like a muscle car.
Yeah,
you know, like, it's you like, it's stupid, but it's awesome. You know, yeah. Like, you're
either, like, taking off or flooring it.
It has 1300 kV. No, no, sorry, 980 kV motors, but they're, oh gosh, what is it, like, 2812? So they're tall and fat. Like, they're huge, torquey motors. And you put a 7-inch 7x4x3 on there and run it at 12S, which, if you do the math, comes out to, like, 2300 kV on 6S. So, like, so imagine taking a 2300 kV motor and putting a 7-inch prop on it and running it at full throttle. Like, that's, like, the kind of stuff that, like, this machine is doing. But because those motors are so big and they have so much cooling, like, they can handle it. And then you drop the hammer on that, and it just, it's like a fucking banshee. Just,
yeah, like, I imagine, like, the in the Millennium Falcon when they hit the overdrive, and it just, yes, like, yeah, yeah.
It's so like, it's stupid, and it's way too expensive, because there's, like, $100 each for ESCs, because they're, like, the APD. But good Lord, is it. Like, just to watch people just be like, what the, and it's so big, like, because it's a 7-inch and it's like a Racer 4 lookalike frame, so it's, like, fat, and it has such a presence in the air that it's just entertaining, you know. I'm not trying to say, like, 12S is the next thing. I'm just saying,
no, but it's
fucking hilarious.
Well, and especially, like, in a time of, like, quarantine and chilling and, like, weird times, it's like, I'm gonna Wonka the shit out, or, like, you know, mad scientist the shit out of this.
I mean, like, have you ever seen an X-Class fly?
Not in person, no.
Oh, okay. Well, for your audience that have seen it, like, you know that there's something different. Like, it's the same thing. Like, you look in the goggles, it's like, okay, yeah, that's a drone. But when you hear that thing just right past,
yeah,
on the flight line, it's like, oh man, that's so cool. This has the same kind of effect, but just, you know, with a twin turbo,
like V8,
like four twin turbo, like, I mean, more like a twin turbo four banger versus like the naturally aspirated V8, you know?
Yeah, totally. Did you have like any sort of issues with like current or PDBs or like dealing with 12S, or was it pretty straightforward?
So what I did was, I have some old, just like full copper PCBs, and I took I think 18 gauge wire, because when you're pushing at 50 volts, you don't need as much current to spin it as fast, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's not that much more current. It's a lot because it's a big prop on a big motor. But it also is less current because you're running it at a higher voltage. But I have them all running into like a 3-ounce PDB that is just like, it's like an old, like ready to fly quads thing. And then I have two XT60s come out, and then I have a series connector that connects both in. So that's spreading the current across the two XT60s. So it's like an XT120, which I should have just gotten. I've got XT90s now that I have filmed the video, but
yeah, I have one XT90 in my toolbox. I don't even know where it came from. I was like, oh, hang on, yeah, to this guy.
Yeah, I got one for the skateboard, and I got one for the 12S.
Yeah. And what about tuning? Like, did you have, like, was it harder stock? Stock?
Like, what I did in the video is stock tune.
Nice. God, FPV quads are getting sick.
I know.
Yeah.
Didn't even touch it. That's, I just put my rates in and said, let's go. I might have tuned down pitch a little bit or something, but it was just like, yeah.
And no like throttle cutting or anything?
No. Sense.
Awesome. Took the restrictor plate off the Red Dragon vibes.
What was fun was like when I started playing with it, I started kind of like, I haven't set up a track with it yet, but like I started kind of racing it, and it was like racing without a GoPro because it had just so much power. Mm. Like, it was heavy, so it kind of like, it would fall out in the corners a little bit, but like on the when you drop the hammer, it just like whoop, you're just like, oh, okay, we're here.
Teleport to gate or to tree, teleport.
It was so fun.
Dude, that's something I haven't done in probably 2+ years, is flown a quad without a GoPro.
Yeah, yeah. I do it every once in a while because I claim I'm a racer anyway, so.
Yeah, I mean, the accolade record and DRL Instagram would say you are.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But it's like I went out the other day for like 3 hours, and I just ran 5-inch packs, no GoPro, no intention to make a video or anything. That was great.
You mentioned earlier, I guess like we should talk about racing a little bit because everything's affected by this COVID thing, including DRL. Mm-hmm. But you were saying that like the pressure of racing benefits you on film sets. Is there any part of being on film sets that benefits your racing?
There's definitely parts of being on film sets that have benefited my presence on DRL, I feel like.
You know, which is a chunk of the game, I feel like. Like, yeah, not the whole thing,
yeah,
but it's a chunk of it.
Yeah, so there's kind of, so I've developed a little bit more of a personality having been around more personalities, which is fun. And then I think there's something to be said about being singular minded. So like when you're on set, people are working on their lane, right? They're focused on doing their thing. And if you can't be more helpful, because you'll start to kind of get in their way. And so like, in a way, like it's helped me remember to just, okay, you're only here to fly and fly well. Don't worry about, you know, this thing or what's going on over there. Just focus in, start getting your in the right mental state. And you know, when it's time to fly, send it.
Yeah. Just get that efficient tunnel vision.
Absolutely.
And I mean, what is the deal with the DRL season now? Are you guys just on a holding pattern, or?
So I'm trying to think of what is public and what's not.
Yeah, I know DRL plays it close to chest, so feel free to be as PC as you need to.
No, it's I don't think that any of the scheduled dates have been affected by quarantine yet, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That being said, because of the volatility of the situation, I don't think that there's like solid, there's like, we have dates that we're looking at, but they're not solid yet, if that makes sense. So,
and no one knows.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's, and I think anybody that watched season 4 would probably assume that DRL would want to push more towards like a live audience thing. And so, you know, it behooves us to wait until after we can bring a bunch of people together, stuff like that. So just think about things that way, I think would be the way to think about it.
Yeah, but that makes sense.
I wouldn't say that there's been like big delays or like we're on a holding pattern or anything. Like it's we're monitoring the situation.
Awesome. And the last thing I want to talk about,
non-committal answer.
Yeah, every time I have a DRL pilot on here, there's always one question that they're like, I can't.
Yeah, you want to, I respect everything that they do and the way they do it, and I want to, be a team player. So it's, you measure your words, same as you do with anything, you know?
Yeah, you're not going to, be on a film shoot and they embargo some stuff, and you're like,
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, before we get into the topic of your podcast, last thing I want to touch on that you've been up to tinkering-wise is the gimbal rig Cinewhoop. What did you learn? Is there potential? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah. So I definitely enjoyed it. It was just such a, I made a video basically where I took a servo and I connected it to the cam stabe function in Betaflight, which basically counters, it looks at the accelerometer and says, okay, if the accelerometer is turned, then I need to turn the gimbal X degrees this way, and it's going to keep it like relatively stable. Now servos are terrible. At least brushed servos or whatever. I don't even know if they're considered brushed, but they're just bad. And so like my theory was, I like the look of Real Steady stabilized, right? And I like the look of it with Horizon lock on. So like where it's kind of moving around like a Mavic would, because it's more consumable. I think for a lot of people,
can I show this to my grandma test?
Exactly. And so I started playing with, but the problem is when you go off axis, so if you're 45 degrees off axis, the image essentially has to crop in by half to keep the image stabilized. So my theory was, if I physically help the GoPro stay more stabilized, will it crop less on the horizon lock mode and give me more information to work with? So if you think about when you're shooting on a GoPro and you lose half the image and you're already shooting at 2.7K at 60 and you lose half of the frame, you're now shooting at 720p essentially. And so you're wasting half of the information that's available. So if you help the camera stay level, you're going to throw away a lot less information and therefore have a better image overall. So it's not about like maintaining width of image. It doesn't matter like what the width of the image is, as long as it suits the need of the story. But if we're throwing away information gratuitously, maybe there's a way that we can kind of find a happy balance between like a full gimbal setup, which is expensive, heavy, cumbersome, ineffective sometimes.
Crashable as hell.
Yeah, exactly. And use post stabilization to help it as well. So end result was, yes, it helped a lot on the stabilization. The servo gimbal is not the right answer because it's super jittery. But I've got a product called the Noir gimbal, Noir stabilizer, N-O-I-R. It's essentially a brushless one-axis servo.
I've seen gimbal. That thing floating around. Yeah, yeah.
So somebody reached out and slipped into the DMs and said that to me, and they showed me some footage that they had shot with it, and I was like, and they were like, this is just hyper smooth. I'm like, oh fuck. So I think that's going to be the next big step for that project. I don't know if it's going to be necessary for everything, but I do feel like maximizing what you can get out of a GoPro is going to be very valuable in the long run as well. So especially if you're looking for that stabilized horizon.
Yeah. And there is when you turn it, obviously, it crops in so much. I've had the same issue. But and the worst is when you have this horizon lock clip that's awesome, except for two turns, and it does the zoom in thing and the crop in thing, and the quality of the footage goes down for that turn. I feel like on Cinewhoops or dealership videos and stuff like that, It's so easy
to
do.
You're not making big moves. Yeah, or anything.
But on like a 5-inch, not ducted, where you're going like 50 plus and you're banking in and turns. Like,
or chasing something, or you're trying to do like a 180 like around a skier while they're whipping it through the air. Like it's, yeah, I could see some potential there, honestly.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see, not so much on Cinewhoops, but like with this or like the Beverly Hill Aerials, DJI X7 rigs, whatever they're using. I'm like, those gimbal motors have just got to be.
I've talked to some people, not Beverly Hills directly, but the word on the street is that it didn't really work for anything more than like slow.
Yeah, like you're not going to be like knife edging.
The theory is that there's some sort of communication between the flight controller on the Inspire and the gimbal itself, where it can like tell it, hey, we're about to go off axis, that it no longer has the communication of when it's not the one that's making those controls, and it starts to just get, it just starts to lose horizon and gets kind of out of whack.
Yeah, why couldn't all this DJI stuff have come out when jailbreaking iPhones was hot?
Yeah, exactly.
We'd be set.
I have an Inspire 1 in the basement that I started tearing apart, and then I had this conversation with someone, and they're just like, don't bother. I was like, okay.
Yeah, I thought about doing that too, like buying, you know, like a Crash Mavic with a broken arm and like basically gutting it and just taping the whole like guts of it to the bottom of a quad.
Yeah, it sounds like the G-forces are just too much for those gimbals. And
yeah, that's what I would, or you're like, all right, that was a sick 4 turns, next gimbal, like it's a wearable item now, you know, you're like, props on a gimbal, I need a set.
There's some sets, like there's some productions that wouldn't be out of the question.
Yeah, I was just watching like behind the scenes Lord of the Ring or the Hobbit, and they were filming with 48 Red Epics.
Holy cow!
Yeah, it blew my. They had them all laid out on a table, and they had them all named, but they were like human names. They're like, "That's nice. Ben, that's Dave."
Steve's over there.
Yeah, but I was like,
"Dude, we just sent Paul back to the shop."
It was like 2.5 million in cameras. It was ridiculous. Oh man.
So that's nothing for their budget, you know.
Yeah, for a movie like The Hobbit. All right, so that closes off the gimbal thing, unless I think that
it's a fun project. I'm excited for that next step. It's gonna be a much better piece of hardware. I actually just got in the mail today, so I'm sponsored by Futaba, and so I reached out and they sent me this is a brushless servo, so I was gonna use this as an intermediary step until I get the other gimbal, because they're like super back ordered or something. So I might post an update with just that, or I might post an update where I try that and then do the what I will hope will be the final version of that project. So
yeah, brushless servo will help for sure. Otherwise I was going to say you need one of those like 1/10 RC car steering servos. That's just like so beefy, you know, machined out and stuff.
It's not beefy as much as the smoothness too. Like which is fine if you're steering or like, you know, doing a servo drop or flaps or whatever. But when you're trying to stabilize footage, it doesn't help to have it go.
Yeah, this is not max cinematic. The last thing I wanted to touch on is your podcast, man. This is huge. This is huge, and you got like the most obvious name ever.
Yeah, so we started a podcast called The Good Flight, which we kind of wanted something a little pithy, a little bit funnier. It's not very SEO friendly, but it's fun. It's like yeah, it's a good flight, we're flying the good flight, you know, that sort of thing. And my co-host is a guy called Johnny Drones. His name is Jonathan Graham, and he's got some crazy experience in the big cinema heavy lift rig. He basically does like every single heavy lift flight on the East Coast and a lot in Atlanta. And like he flies, you know, $140,000 cameras for, you know, movies like The Greatest Showman or Mr. Robot or Impossible Kimmy Schmidt, and is just an absolutely insanely talented guy. But he also has some experience flying FPV and kind of dabbles with that, and is, you know, roughly my age, and we get along really well, and we have this awesome back and forth just talking about the premise of the show, which is professional drones. So we kind of tried to broaden the horizon a little bit to not pigeonhole into like just FPV or just cinema, but it's, let's tell the stories of these good flights within the professional world. There's tons of stuff going on behind the scenes that we don't know about, or what's going on. And you know, we spent 15 minutes of our last episode talking about how they did a catch and release shot for Mr. Robot, and like the stuff that went into it, the planning, the why, all of those kinds of conversations build a narrative that is really compelling, I think, and something that, you know, people want to hear about and want to understand, like what went into just these 15 seconds of film, in a way that is really engaging and fun.
Oh, 100%. Well, and it seems like information that's not very accessible, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
And I know we were like, you know, poking fun at the SEO and stuff like that, but I think not pigeonholing yourself, like for a long time, I was like, man, I shouldn't have done Fly Life, you know? And then now I'm like, that was like, I'm happy with it because it's like, it's not just like FPV Martin or something, you know? Yeah,
exactly.
And I still have this like weird debate of like how we all got stuck with like Call of Duty name or tags.
Yeah.
You know, like Johnny and Steel walked away with murder, and then there's the rest of us.
I feel like I'm halfway along the
jerk. Yeah, that's true.
Nurk, but,
yeah. But if you know you, it makes sense. But Nurk does not sound like.
No, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Nurk is like, it reminds me of like, I murked that guy, you know?
It's back to Call of Duty. Well, when I was on the Star Talk podcast with Neil deGrasse Tyson, a little name drop there apparently.
Oh yeah, I had
One of the co-hosts was just like, I don't like Nurk. It sounds like Nark, and I'm just like, oh boy, here we go.
Yeah, you're like, why, you know somebody?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
like I told them not to say anything.
What was that like, dude?
Dude, it was
you're just
so
like
crazy.
Fan clubbing at like I would almost be like, hey.
It was so hard not to. The like, because you're trying to like play it cool. I'm like, yeah, I fly drones. I'm pretty sweet. No, I mean, so I went to New York for like, I had set up like a few meetings. This was right before quarantine started, actually. And I set up a few meetings with a couple of different people. And one of the people that I was meeting with, it turns out that his girlfriend is a producer for the Star Talk podcast. From Neil deGrasse Tyson and Gary and I don't remember the guy's name, but and like we kind of just like jokingly like, hey, if you ever need a guest, I could come fly drones in the Hayden Planetarium, and then like chirp chirp chirp, nothing happened, and then like literally like 2 hours before I left for New York, they're like, yeah, let's do it. It turns out he's like, they had a schedule change, he's going to be in town. I'm like,
oh. Glad I emailed that guy.
Yeah, so like I'm like running around like trying to grab all of the stuff that I would want to like be able to show off, like because I wasn't planning on bringing squirts necessarily, and so I'm like getting all this stuff together, and like, and then, you know, the day of, it's just like, okay, meet us at in the basement of the freaking Hayden Planetarium, which is, you know, like a block off of Central Park, and all this crazy stuff, and me and Andy Shen just kind of like walking around with our little bag of drones, like, we're gonna go hang out with Neil deGrasse Tyson for the afternoon, like, what is going on? And like, so like we took the elevator, we got up to the floor, and like there's like these like a couple couches, like a meeting area, and there's Neil in like freaking sweatpants just like laying back in the chair having a chat with a couple people in the office, and he's just like, hey, what's up, Neil? Like, I'm
like,
Paul.
Oh, cool. I'm going to try to remember that one.
It's nice to meet you, Dr. deGrasse Tyson. Yeah. It's like, no, it's Neil. I'm like, okay, Dr. Tyson. But like, it's, it was really, really fun to meet. Obviously really fun to meet him. Inspiring guy, you know, has been, you know, teaching science for so long. But what was really interesting and exciting to me was that, like, you know, I've you know, watched so much content and seen him in this, that, and the other thing, and all this stuff. And meeting him in person was just a continuation of what I expected of him. Like, it was, there was no surprise. It was, he is so genuine with who he is on camera, and is the same as he was in person, which was really interesting.
Yeah, you know, like, whenever you meet someone like that, like someone super famous, or like someone you look up to, you always like, for me, I always have this moment where, like, you're talking to him, and at some point you're like, it's just a dude.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
100%.
In this case, a super, super smart dude, but
yeah,
still just a dude.
Yeah, but I think my favorite thing, and I think it's fine for me to share this, but like, we were sitting in his podcast studio, which is really just part of his office, and I looked up, and there's like a cabinet that. Oh, my dog just burst in. He has a series of cabinets, and then like stacked on top of these cabinets are like the robes that you wear to like graduation ceremonies, and there were, I asked how many there were up there. There were 37 honorary doctorates that were just literally like folded and piled up in the corner. And I'm like,
like intramural jerseys. You're like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, like 100%. Like it was just like, it, like, so like that was a moment where I'm just like, I am so out of my league here. Like, what's going on?
Yeah. Do you, like, especially like meeting people like that, do you ever have like existential worries where you're like, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I also remember that what we do is pretty cool, and most people haven't experienced something like that before.
Yeah. Whenever I tell someone what I do or like show it to them, it's always like, you know, you get so in this like, I don't even know, like you get this like tunnel vision, you're in your own world, and you share it with someone else, you see their reaction, and you're like, oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when you bring someone into that perspective, you make it about them, you know, I want you to experience this because you'll enjoy it. You know, this, try these goggles on, you'll see something that you've never seen before, you know, that sort of stuff. And like, it turns out that I haven't really bumped into anyone that's been like, that's fine. Everybody has been like, okay, this is awesome. I've never experienced anything like this. So that's my favorite part about it, is like, you know, just get them in the goggles, let them see it.
Yeah, totally. And like people's reactions, even like just like seeing a quad, like yesterday I went to get an oil change and they gave me a loaner car because their waiting room was closed.
You know, I see.
Because this whole thing. And I had all my quads and my Sony with me and I didn't want to leave it in my car. So I was like, right, let me grab the stuff. And the guy saw me like walk into the dealership with it. He's like, so what do you do, man?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, you go to explain it. What is your, like, when people ask what you do, do you just say drone pilot?
I usually start with I'm a professional drone racer, mostly because that kind of like leads to the more like to the fun conversations, you know, but because I don't mind sharing that, I guess. Like, it's fun to just be like, oh yeah, I'm a professional drone racer. I'm like, what, that's a thing, you know? Like, then you kind of get to watch it.
And like in relation to like the entire population, that's probably what people would relate to you most, right? More people see DRL than see your channel.
Right. Definitely. And so, you know, that's, I try to launch into that. And then if they're interested, then I try to explore, you know, like, okay, but I also take these and do, you know, help shoot movies or, whatever. And that, you know, that helps continue to break down those walls. Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta go do like one multi GP race or something so I can add that in, because people are like, what do you do? And I'm like, I use racing drones to make cinematic content. And they're like, oh, you race drones? And I'm like, you're not hearing the whole thing.
I've been saying high performance drones. I use high performance drones to
film. I might have to adopt that into airport seat lingo.
That's not my word, but I also don't think I can say whose it is because it's somebody I work for. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah. And then
drone.
And when you travel for stuff, do you check it or bring it on?
Well, I have a video just for that. No, I have a big Pelican case that most of my stuff, including the drones, go in. And then I carry on batteries and like the expensive things like a controller and goggles.
Yeah. I used to carry everything on, and then one day I was like, fuck this, basically. I just started checking everything but batteries, basically. I have like a little radio case and everything. And like going from walking through an airport and like getting onto a plane with like everything like just the weight of a laptop.
Yep. Yeah.
Have you traveled for anything non-FPV since you started flying?
Yes, but I still end up bringing drones anyway.
Yeah. Okay. I've had like two trips that didn't have any drones with them, and it's like the most.
Oh, it's so nice.
You're like, I could jog through this airport.
Man. I've got it. I feel like I've got it down to a science now, though. Cause like, so I've got like, I got a rolly bag with four wheels, so it stands up on its own. Yep. And then my carry on, so all my lipos go in that. Okay. And they go into that with another bag, so that if I have to check the rolly bag, I just take that one bag out with the batteries. And then I have my big, like, FPV heli pack, but there's no batteries in it. It's just like goggles and radio and maybe a laptop. So it's big, but it's not heavy. And then I just take it and I stack it on top of the rolly bag. And so I have no weight on my shoulders. Yeah, all of the weight of the batteries are in the thing. And I just walk on through the airport. That's been the way.
That's the move. Having the weight off your shoulders doubles your travel time. Like how long you can last traveling.
Oh yeah. Like, and I'm a sweaty guy in general too. So like, I just get like, as soon as I put the backpack on, my back is covered in sweat. So like, I'm like, all right, this is so much better.
You sit
I'm
down like, on the plane and you're like trying to assess how far the smell's made.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, sorry.
So having that weight off my shoulders, no pun intended, has really helped.
Yeah. I feel you. Well, awesome, man. That's all the stuff and then some, that I wanted to cover.
Awesome.
Did you have anything, obviously, like you can plug whatever, but do you have anything you wanted to add to the conversation or anything?
I just want to say how grateful I am for, you know, the show that you've been putting on for, you know, I think you're probably the longest still running.
No, I was until the FPV show dropped that goddamn episode last week.
No.
Yeah.
That's funny. So you're the most consistent over the last, you know, it's, but it, like, you know, the having people like you continuing to put out content, you know, even in these strange times and, you know, giving people something to look forward to every week and giving people the opportunity to just hear people that are outside of, you know, what they're trying to deal with right now is, I mean, super important. And so I just want to commend you on continuing to push and to continuing to do stuff, even if it doesn't always seem, like the best thing, you know, the most fun thing, you know, keep working on it. Good work.
Thanks, awesome. My dude. Appreciate that. And then what about podcast plug that sponsors?
Yeah, absolutely. So I just kicked off just today. Well, today is, April 22nd. The Good Flight, we did a kind of introductory episode and did some cool behind the scenes for, the TV show, Mr. Robot. We're gonna have some really, really cool guests from the cinema industry, from the sciences industry, space, Air Force, whatever you want.
Space Force. Notch those two together.
Yeah, exactly. We've got a big list, a big bench of contacts that we're gonna be starting pulling from. It's gonna be really fun. I've got my channel, nerk.tv. I'm trying to push out as much content as I can right now, doing lots of fun stuff, whether it's a 12S 50 volt drone or a little servo gimbal thing. So if you're interested at all in finding something else to do in these times, I'm always here for you. So
awesome. Yeah. And I'll link all that stuff in the bottom. And then when can we see your $200 LUT pack is my final question.
as soon as I could financially recover from having bought Johnny's. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I'll
sweet
never
man.
Financially recover from this.
Yeah. Sweet man. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here and everybody stay fine.
Yeah.